But for now, back to the shale pit.
I found it! I found a tiny fish fossil!
You have, that's good. This is my granddaughter. She's the first time she's been here. And I brought her up because she's keen to look for fishes, and she's found two quite nice bits. That's one from the back of the fish. Oh that's good.
Well done.
In the paper. Yeah. You could come in here and you could spend 10 minutes and find something good, or you could spend the whole day and find nothing much.
I'm with paleontologist Dr. Alec Ritchie, a research fellow at the Australian Museum and a member of the Australian National University's Emeritus Faculty.
Most people find something, even as bits of or fish poo, because the fish are eating something, they're crushing up, it's probably bony, something bones, and then that comes out as poo. So we let people keep the fish poo, and they're quite happy with that. Anything rare and unusual we keep, but now we have so many common, there's only one kind of fish, basically. We've found a second one, we don't know which layer it comes from. So we keep the really good ones, or the ones that show something unusual anatomically, but the rest we can let people take away. You're doing quite well. Good. Yeah.
The shale pit we're in today might be rich in fish fossils, but this isn't the site that made Canoundra famous. The original fish fossil site lies about 10 to 15 kilometres north of here, just outside the town itself. It was at this site that the famous 56 slab was found, a sedimentary monolith jam-packed with 360 million-year-old fish fossils. Back in the 50s, Bruce Looms was a teenager living in Canoundra, and he can still recall the events leading up to the discovery of the fossil site. It really is a bit of a sprawling Aussie yarn.
Back then, in 1955 actually, it all happened in 1955, a local dozer operator, he was the only one in the area, and the council hired him because the particular road where the fossil site is, there was a terribly bad bend. So they decided to try and straighten it out. So they had this dozer driver, and he was pushing stuff around, and this particular rock he turned up, and it looked like it had funny-looking markings on it. It looked strange to him. So he actually steered it across the road and pushed it up against the fence, and he said, oh, well, you know, we'll save it for safekeeping. And it was sort of actually forgotten for two or three days, and it so happened then that a chap by the name of Bill Simpson, an apiarist, and he had his beehives about 300 metres above the actual site. He was the chap then that come down, and he sat on this particular rock. We call it the 1956 slab, the actual slab. And anyway, he was sort of leaning back and he was diddling his hands on the actual rock itself, and he could feel the roughness. But then when he got back into Canoundra, he actually wrote a letter to the Australian Museum. But it wasn't for about 6 months later that Harold Fletcher, who was the creator of the Australian Museum at the time, Harold's a paleontologist, and Ted Rayner, Harold's mate, was a geologist. And one particular day he said, I'm going out to Condoblin. How about you come with me over the weekend or whatever, and we'll call in at Canoundra and have a look at this rock. So they did that. When they looked at it and Harold saw it, what it was, they didn't get to Condoblin, so they made haste to try and get it back into Canoundra. And as they said, they probably virtually slept with it that night. It was that precious, but it had been sitting laying there for nearly 6 months before anything had been done to it. And back in 1955, 56, they didn't have any big semi-trailers and movers like we've got today, so they had what we call a dog trailer. They towed this little trailer behind an ex-army Blitz Chev truck they had, and it took them 2.5 days to drive from Canoundra to Sydney to take this, but they put bales of hay on this dog trailer and they roped it down and they really looked after it like it was a little baby. And I think Harold did a little bit of work on it, and they put it under glass, and that's where it stopped until Dr. Alex Ritchie come on the scene in the 80s, I think it was, when Alex come on.
I heard about it before I even left Britain. So it was one of the first things I went to look for when I arrived. And then I found to my horror that the 56 slab was tucked behind glass and I couldn't get at it for 12 years or something. It didn't matter because somebody else was working on it. But I came out as early as I could to Canoundra. I came with my predecessor, Harold Fletcher, and he showed me where the slab was found. And I knew, anybody with half an eye could see, this was an incredible rich site. So in January 1993, we came out and just a quiet little dig, 20-ton excavator, quiet little dig, three of us. We started at one end of the bend, and within 3 hours, we struck the layer with the fish.
Now, when Dr. Alec Ritchie talks fish, it's not the same as when you and I talk about fish. The fish from the 56th slab were armour-plated Devonian warriors with thick, broad, platy heads, powerful jaws and razor-sharp teeth. And we know this because of the incredible detail in the Canoundra fossils.
They're extremely well preserved. Some of them are almost in three dimensions. So it was obviously a very mass kill where a huge body of water dried up completely. And after they died and they rotted, but the bones, the shells of these skeletons were in the outside of the fish. And sand came in and it filled in the inside of the skeletons. So that when they were finally buried in the sand and it turned into rock and it compacted, they're inside there in 3D, which is very unusual. And also the sheer abundance, and they're literally crammed side by side, they'd nowhere to go. So it's the quantity and the quality. But it happened at a very interesting time in history, evolutionary history, because this is the time when fishes with fins were evolving slowly into fishes with feet, which became amphibians. So it was very exciting. And one of the biggest fishes, Mandajaria, which is about 1.6 metres long, we found at the back of the skull a bone with two facets, and it showed this fish could raise its and lower its head up and down, not sideways, up and down. And that's the beginning of the neck, and then later they got the sideways movement. So you get this pattern across the world that they're evolving on a broad front, and some faster than others. So things in there we haven't found yet. We've only dug up the edge of this pool. We did actually find the edge of the pool. I think the rest of the pool's still buried on the ground. I think 9/10 of the pools maybe could well be buried. We took 4,000 fish out of the area we dug up, and there could be another 5, 10, 20,000. Now, I tried to think myself into the mind of one of these amphibians, a tiny little mind. They could have crawled over the sandbar, or more likely, as the pool dried, they would have crawled to the centre of the pool, because they could breathe, they could crawl over the corpses of the other things that are stranded. And I've got this vision that in the centre of that pool there's something with these twinkle toes spread out, and probably about up to 2 metres long, and it'll be in three dimensions and just waiting to be dug up. That's my dream. I just hope we can open it up while I'm still around to enjoy it.
So the fossilised remains of a 360 million year old fish with legs might lie beneath a paddock in Canoundra. Who would have thought? Just when I think we're done for the day, Alec lights a butane burner and starts heating up some white powder. As suspicious as it sounds, this is actually a quick masterclass in how to prepare fossils to be photographed for publication in academic journals.
So you get the whole of the outside of the fish as a natural mould, a negative. But to see that, we make a cast, we use rubber latex, and then we put a black pigment in that makes it opaque. And then the trick is, we don't photograph the fossil, we photograph the rubber cast, which is the positive, which is what the bone would have looked like. But we kill all the colour staining and that by coating it with a white powder.
So what's the white powder?
Ammonium chloride. And it goes into a gas, ammonium chloride, and as soon as it hits something solid, it becomes a fine powder. And you'll see the difference when we coat it.
All right, so you're puffing it out now onto the latex, and
and it'll kill all that colour differences that you see with the weathering and the staining and that. It picks up every little detail because the powder's so fine. And then the trick is that when you light it from top left. If you're doing a scientific paper, we always have the things lit from the top left. Otherwise, you have to reorient your mind, and that's a bit more difficult.
You really get a sense of the three-dimensionality of that armoured plate.
It's beautiful. The other one I have here is a cast of one of the very first best specimens, in fact, the type specimen which the species was described. And it's got a beautiful tail. Every vertebra in the tail shows up. So I'll just highlight that for you.
Where was this fossil originally found?
Well, here. This is from here. This is the type specimen, the one that everybody will refer to. It's in the Australian Museum. And it's the type specimen of Caurolepis McLaughlini.
This powder really does make the detail leap off the...
So far, you wouldn't see any grain size in the powder. So that, I mean, when you photograph it and blow it up, you can go up to very high magnification, you still see the detail.
It's amazing how fine the detail that's preserved in these fossils is.
Because it takes in a neutral colour, you take the pictures in black and white, and essentially you're seeing like the bone as it was when the thing died.
Dr. Alec Ritchie introducing me to the world of fish fossils. You also heard from Bruce Looms, a retired farmer, now collection manager at the Age of Fishes Museum in Canoundra. The museum is a great resource if you want to learn more about these ancient fish. You can get up close and personal with the actual fossil slabs and even touch them. It's a hands-on collection. For more information, follow the link on the Off Track website, abc.net.au/radionational/offtrack.